going to describe how I construct the earthing enhancer. It's really quite simple, and you do it in stages of development, conceptually speaking. So we start with a wire, and the wire is an open circuit, a straight line piece of wire connecting our body with the earth. And we do not wish to break this line any more than we already have. I mean, we've broken the loop, which is conventional circuitry, you know, among lay people, you know, most of us. But we don't want to break it any further. So we want to uphold this principle throughout its development. So we use a straight piece of wire that's not broken any further than it already is. And we coil it, and then we put an iron core inside the coil, and then we take this core shape and we turn it into a donut, a bagel, a donut, a wheel with a hole in the middle. And then we take two of these, such that the coil, I mean, such that they are in series, one after the other. They're in line. So, in our connection with the earth, one follows after the other. And one is wound clockwise, and the other is wound counterclockwise. And you'll discover by experimentation, if you don't know this already, that no matter which way you flip the donut, you know, turn it over, it'll still be the way you wound it. And the way you, you can change whether it's clockwise or counterclockwise depending on which direction you go around the circle and which direction you wind it, how shall I say this, perpendicular to the circle. And that's the significant feature to a toroidal core, is that the winding is perpendicular to the circularity of the toroid, of this shape. Whereas with a cylinder, the winding is parallel to the circularity of the cylinder, because the cylinder possesses only one circularity, and that goes around its middle, or, you know, but with a toroid, there's two circularities. You've got the circularity of the ring, but you've also got the circularity of the circumference around that ring. And so we wind it around its circumference, but we travel in a circle around the whole ring. And so we still maintain a ring that we're not winding around. Because if we wound the coil parallel to the donut, it would simply go around the outer rim, or maybe along the side, or along the inside, around and around, but it would not go, because we've taken a cylinder and bent it around the two ends until the two ends meet each other. That's essentially what we've done. And we've created this second circularity by bending those two ends of a cylinder around until they meet. And so now this new circularity that we've created is perpendicular to the winding itself. And that's what we need. We need some kind of circularity to be perpendicular to the actual winding. And we've also done something else. We've created an infinite loop inside the core, a magnetic loop that goes around and around endlessly in one direction or the other. And that's going to be the case if we start to do experiments along the lines of Edward Leedskalnin, which are basically experiments to bring out and elucidate the actuality of a DC transformer. You'll hear electrical engineers or physicists or whatever tell you, oh, DC transformer does not exist, and they'll demonstrate and show you how it does not exist, and it's bogus, because they didn't do the right experiment. And if you go to my website, earthinglife.info, on one of those pages, I forget which one, it'll display the experiment, the proper way to do the experiment to elucidate whether or not a DC transformer actually exists. Edward Leedskalden does not call it a DC transformer, he calls it a perpetual motion holder. And you'll learn what the actuality is of an AC transformer. It's a DC transformer rapidly switched, and that's all it is. And then you'll learn that an AC current are two DC currents running in opposite directions at the same time, each one going down its own wire, because that's a closed loop in which you have one wire dedicated to one pathway of the DC current going one way, and the other wire, the DC current, is dedicated along that pathway going the opposite direction. And 60 times a second, they switch wires. But the individual current themselves does not change direction, nor does it change speed. It simply changes which wire it travels along. So from the point of view of the wire, it thinks the current is going backwards and forwards, but from the point of view of the current, it thinks it's simply hopping from one wire to the other. It's no different than traveling down a bi-directional street, in which you're traveling on the right side of the road and the oncoming traffic is traveling on its right side of the road in the opposite direction. And then 60 times a second, you switch sides. You travel on the left side of the road, and then back to the right side, and back to the left. And everybody does it at the same time, so there's no collisions. And nobody changes speed, and nobody changes direction. They just change which side of the road they're on. That's all an AC current is. The generator acts like a toggle switch that toggles which line the DC current is going to be traveling on. Whether the DC current leaving the power station travels on the right wire, and the incoming DC current travels on the left wire, or do they switch wires back and forth 60 times a second. In Europe, 50 times a second. That's all it amounts to. Notice that the cycles, well, no, I won't go there, because that's not a valid presumption. Okay, so that's the description of DC versus AC current, and that's good to keep in mind, because that's one of the principles I tried to uphold when I adhered to the principle of using a toroidal core to wind my coil around, as opposed to a straight coil, which is what everybody uses for the most part. You know, that's the straight coil is the most, or a cylinder is the most popular shape to wind around. But I use a toroidal, and I use two of them, and they're each wound in opposite directions, and this is to neutralize AC hum to some degree. It doesn't do a completely good job. What we really need is a slider switch that somehow, I don't know the circuitry of a electric guitar, but they have a slider switch in there, along with two toroidal cores. I think they're toroidal. Now, I don't even know if they're toroidal. They could be cylindrical. But they have two coils, and each is wound in opposite directions, and then they have some kind of a slider switch that changes the emphasis between the two. It's probably some kind of a center tap that slides up and down, so that when you slide up one, you're sliding down the other. You're changing the number of turns of one coil with respect to the other coil. That's probably what's going on. You're tuning. You're tuning each coil relative to each other, and that will determine how much right-handedness versus how much left-handedness you've got in series with each other, with each of the two coils between them. And that, you're looking for the resonant balance point between the two, such that your AC hum gets neutralized completely. And I don't do that. I mean, you could do it, but I do a much more simpler method, and so consequently, it's not perfect, but it's simple for me to put together. I basically use two iron cores that are the same size, same dimension, and I wind the wire tight as I can, and I count the number of turns, and I use the same number of turns on each. And, you know, that's the best I figure I can do, you know? So they're in series, though. And so that's a whole nother thing as to how, I think it's also on my earthinglife.info website, various wiring schematic diagrams, depending on whether you're located in the northern hemisphere, the equator, or the southern hemisphere. But essentially, I'm not going to go into that. I'll let you look into that. Essentially, this is how I do it, the coil. And then one other thing. I take the two toroidal coil forms, and I wind only one layer on each one. I don't bother to do more than that, and there are reasons for that, and I'm not going to get into that for the moment. But I sandwich, they're connected in series, so that one is on the earth side and one is on the body side of this wire linkage between body and earth. But then I sandwich them together, and I put a magnet between them or inside their circular hole, either way. It could be a bar magnet, could be a, probably a ring magnet, could be a ferrite magnet, could be a neodymium magnet. Your choice. I'll let you experiment and decide. And then according to the position, you know, where you're located, northern hemisphere, equator versus southern hemisphere, I orient the magnet. You know, it's a whole other deal. That's another little complexity, but I won't get into that. And then, optimally, I'll take a quartz, a double-terminated quartz crystal, and insert it into the hole between these two sandwiched toroidal cores, such that the quartz crystal is parallel to the axis of these toroids. So it's like putting two wheels together side by side, and then you stick an axle in there, and the axle is in this form of a double-terminated quartz crystal. Now, the next thing I'll do, now what I'm doing, with the advent of this quartz crystal, I'm getting into the dielectric field. So, prior to that, in my description, when I came up to the point of putting the magnet in place, that was the maximum development of the amplification of the electromagnetic field that is passing between you and the Earth in the form of a voltage signal, voltage-based signal. And I have to give credit to Philip Nelson for educating me on this point, or helping me educate myself, because I kind of already sort of knew it, and we both agreed that this is what happens when you have an open circuit. There's no current, there's strictly voltage. And I think that the contribution he made was that he used the word signal. It's signal devoid of energy. You know, amperage is the energy component of a closed-loop circuit. But when we open up the circuit, we lose the current, but we still retain the voltage. And voltage is based on diffusion when there's no current available to move the electrons around. The electrons are still going to move, but they're going to move by diffusion. And diffusion is not the same as current. I'm sure you'll agree that what happens with a current is that the pressure of voltage gets behind the current and pushes it along. With diffusion, there is no pressure to engage the electrons or smoke particles to push them along. All you have is the excitation of the field that will determine how quickly or how slowly the particles of energy or matter, whichever the case may be, how quickly they diffuse. So if the field is more excited, they diffuse more quickly, and if the field is less excited, they diffuse more slowly. And this is another instance of the significance of the dielectric field is more significant than the waves of the field in determining how the waves behave. Ultimately, it's all about the field anyway, but predominantly, because the field dominates the wave and determines how the wave behaves. The wave still has some wiggle room as to whether or not it wants to behave, but to some degree it really doesn't have a choice in a sense, because the pressures of the field will dominate, and when any kind of resistance is encountered, is overcome, the wave will break forth and behave according to the specification of the field imposed upon it, whether it wants to behave that way or not. I mean, there's always wiggle room for the wave to express itself in its own unique way, But dominantly, its behavioral characteristics are predetermined by the behavior of the field surrounding it. Getting back to diffusion. So when we're dealing with an open circuit, we're strictly dealing with diffusion. They don't use this term in the earthing book, I don't think. They use electron migration. I don't know why. Be that as it may, I prefer to use the word diffusion because it's a word, you know, that's already commonly used in science, normally having to do with mechanical motion. But see, they don't want to lend the notion that electrons are really a mechanical, a manifestation of the field, because they don't want to buck physics. It's politically incorrect to talk about the field of space in mechanical terms, because that would lend credence to the notion that space is not empty, that it's full, and it's called the ether. So when they want to talk about space in terms of it being empty, they call it space. And if we want to talk about space in terms of it being full, we call it the ether. And these are the two translations of the word Akasha, depending on which time frame you're using. If you look at Sanskrit-English dictionaries from the 1800s, they will translate Akasha as ether. But when you look at Sanskrit-English dictionaries of the latter 1900s and now the 20th century, you'll see that Akasha translates into the English term space. So we have political manipulation of society's way of defining reality literally imposed upon our lexicography, our dictionaries. It literally goes that far. It's a very extensive manipulation, and I hate to say this, but Marty Zucker doesn't want to go there or even acknowledge that it exists. He just wants to say it's a natural tendency. You know, he wants to be nice. It's the natural tendency of certain people, the aristocracy working behind the scenes, to manipulate social awareness, be that as it may, because we don't deserve any better, apparently, to allow us to be free to self-determine our own thought. I was just lucky that I didn't have to work for a living, so I developed my own thought. I was lonely, but I'm self-taught to a large degree, so I've been able to develop my own style of thinking because I get to pick and choose who I study from, who I read, what books I read, and whatnot. And so I tend to be well-read because I read from multiple sources, from both sides. I like to read the antagonists, too. I learn from them. I learn in what way the protagonists fail to express themselves because they're inhibited. They're self-inhibited for some reason. So we all have to break our own barriers, which are self-imposed, regardless of how those barriers got put there. It doesn't really matter. The fact is, if we maintain them, it's to our own detriment. So, enough of the little soapboxing. Now, moving along. So now we cross over into the dialectical amplification aspect of this design when we start to add quartz. And during meditation, it came to me a year ago when I was working on an Eric Dollard's analog computer applied to the biocircuit that glass should be the dielectric of choice. So now I realize in any of its forms, quartz crystal is obviously a more refined, more enhanced version of that. Glass is kind of, you know, it's like a mess. It's kind of, you know, it's got no internal organization to it anymore. It's because it's been melted and then allowed to solidify. There'll be some order when it solidifies, but it's not the same as the highly ordered state of a quartz crystal. So what I do now is I use quartz as my dielectric rather than glass. Quartz either as a quartz sand or as a quartz crystal, a double-terminated quartz crystal. So I'll put the double-terminated quartz crystal on the inside of the hole of this sandwiched two toroidal coil iron core forms, and it'll be parallel to the axis of those two wheels, so to speak, those two bagels, those two donuts. But then I want to bury this whole arrangement that we're building up, piece by piece, layer by layer. I'm going to want to bury it in quartz sand. And I'm going to want to contain that quartz sand burial in a container that's made of another insulated material. Let's say it's plastic, although I prefer to use terracotta myself as being the most ideal earth form that is non-electrically conductive, that will contain this whole mess in a nice compact form. It'll be heavy with all the sand and the iron core, but hey, this is an earthing amplifying device, so don't be shocked. Don't be surprised that the amplification amounts to a lot of massive density. So now we've got our ideal containment of a terracotta container, both lid and base, and we have it's contained this whole mess. And now we want to do one other thing before we fill this container with quartz sand and immerse the two iron core toroidal coils that are wired together in series, so that one wire is going to enter this terracotta container and another wire is going to exit it, one going to earth and the other lead going to the body, the earthing appliance connecting to the body. But before we put anything inside this container, we want to line the inside with a metallic film or foil, one or the other, up against the inside surface of the container. Now, obviously, you could reach into the kitchen for the aluminum foil, because most homes, that's what you have. Ideally, you probably would not want to use aluminum, but, you know, if you're just starting out, use what you've got. Use aluminum foil. Now, just as an aside, aluminum foil is actually wax paper which has a thin veneer of aluminum coated on both sides. So you're actually dealing with wax paper made out of paraffin wax, and I don't know if there's actually any paper there. It may just be a film of wax. But be that as it may, according to Eric Dollard, a suggestion he made in a letter to me, he said, you know, try gold. So I went and purchased from Taiwan gold leaf in the form of powder. And I haven't used it yet, but I ordered that. It took weeks to arrive from Thailand. I think it took close to 2 months. And then from Amazon, I ordered a roast pot, you know, for roasting like a turkey or a small Cornish hen. But it's made out of terracotta. And the important point, though, if you use terracotta, if you go to that much trouble, try to get it without a glaze. So it's a non-glazed terracotta pot. And that's what I got. It cost me something like $90, and it's huge. And of course, you can suspect it's got a certain amount of weight to it. And then I look around for quartz sand that has the least amount of dust, and I found one seller on Amazon that sells what they call it's used for making bonsai. You know, when you plant a bonsai, you use this apparently because it has a low amount of dust to it. So, you know, you don't want to inhale the dust, obviously. Otherwise, you got to wash the sand to wash out the dust and drain out the water and air dry it. You know, it's going to be work for you. So I try to do the least amount of work possible. So I got the quartz sand for making bonsai plantings for my quartz sand of choice. And then I got this terracotta pot that has no glazing on it. And I got the gold leaf powder. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to wear plastic gloves, and I'm going to put a little bit of the powdered gold leaf into the bottom of the pot and then the bottom of the lid. You know, I'm going to invert the lid, turn it upside down, and I'm going to rub it around with my fingers with wearing a glove to rub the gold leaf into the terracotta into the inner surface of the terracotta pot, and any excess gold leaf left over I'll scoop back into its, you know, bottle that it came in. So I'll use that for next time. Hopefully no terracotta debris will come off the surface of the terracotta, so it might be good to rub it around with my fingers bare. I mean, rub it around without any gold to see if any terracotta comes off, and then see how lightly should I be rubbing the gold leaf into the terracotta so as not to disturb the terracotta and cause it to come off the surface, because I don't want that to happen. Because I don't want to pour it back into the pot with the gold leaf. If I regulate it just precisely as to how much gold leaf I put in here to rub it around, such that there's very little left over, I may just leave it there and mix it up with the sand. If terracotta debris comes off and mixes with the gold, because I'm not going to want to put the terracotta necessarily back into a jar of gold leaf powder. A little bit, maybe, but not if it's an excessive amount. So now that we've got gold leaf, or aluminum foil, or silver foil, or whatever, copper foil, lining the inside of the chassis of the device, now we can fill it, the base, with a certain amount, a layer of sand, quartz sand, place the two coil forms on top with their magnet and the quartz crystal, and bury it with some more, cover it with some more sand, fill it to the top. And now, since the lid of the terracotta pot is curved, I'm not sure how to fill that with sand. I guess what I'll have to do is drill a hole through the top, and my two wires will come out through that hole, and I'll also be able to seal the edges, probably with some kind of a glue or sealant. I'm not sure what yet. It should be strong, and it should be airtight. And now I'll use the hole to fill the sand through, you know, use a funnel and or, you know, whatever, put the sand in, fill it up to the top, and then plug that with the same sealant or a different sealant. I could use wax, beeswax, to fill the drilled hole with a natural substance. I could use natural pine resin, melt it down, and pour it into the hole. Of course, it'll sink into the wax, into the sand, and that's another thing you could do. Once you get the thing filled up with sand, well, the problem is the hot resin might melt the insulation off the wire. We don't want that to happen. So one possibility I was thinking of would be to pulverize either buy the pine resin in powdered form or buy it in rock form and pulverize it yourself, and then mix it up, blend it with the quartz sand before filling up the chassis, the container. Because the pine resin will serve as an electrette. See, you've got the quartz sand serving as a dielectric. And so here's the description of why I'm doing this. Think of the coil, or the wire for that matter, as one plate of a capacitor, potentially speaking. The foil lining the inside of the chassis, or the gold leaf that you rubbed onto the inside of the chassis, either way, is the other plate of a capacitor. And the quartz sand, with or without the electrette material of pine resin powder mixed up with it, the quartz sand is serving as a capacitor, as the dielectric of the capacitor. And so if you put an electrette material in there, it's already pre-charged, or chargeable, or, I see, I don't understand electrettes that well. Shows you I'm still a little confused. What you've got is a floating plate. The foil lining the inside of the chassis is a floating plate. It's not electrically connected to anything. We don't want it to be electrically connected to anything, because this is an open circuit. So consequently, the capacitor is an open circuit-oriented capacitor in which only one plate is connected, and that's the coil, to anything, and it's connected mutually to both body and earth. The other plate lining the inside of the container, the chassis of this device, is not connected to anything. It's a floating plate, but it creates polarization, such that now the dielectric can function as the dielectric of a capacitor. Without that floating plate, it's just sand. And the air surrounding the sand is an extension of that sand, and there is polarization, but it extends to infinity. And so you don't get a nice, compact, intense polarization. You get a diffusion of polarization. And this is what happens when voltage migrates away from a source without traveling it, without any current pushing it along. It diffuses its polarization, which means you don't have an intense polarity. You don't have an intense voltage charge capacitively stored in the dielectric material because it's diffusing to infinity. So you have very little storage in your capacitor, consequently. And of course, you don't want that. We want to amplify the voltage characteristic that is stored within the dielectric material of this capacitor, namely the quartz sand, with or without the crushed pine rosin in powder form. So we want to bring that polarization in closer to the coil of wire by creating this floating plate on the inside of the chassis of this container, of this device. We don't have to bring it in really close. We could, you know, you could effectively, you know, put glue or melted pine rosin surrounding the coil form of this, the two sandwich toroids, and then just sprinkle some sand on top of it, and then wrap foil around that, and then seal it with some kind of a insulated sealer, like paper, let's say. You know, you could seal it with paper. Now you've got your device, your amplifying device, with a minimum amount of sand and a minimum amount of excess weight, for that matter. And your if your two plates do not touch, and they won't because you've got plastic insulator around the coil, so you'll have a maximum voltage. In fact, you could even leave out the sand and just surround the two coil forms with aluminum foil and then with paper or plastic wrap, and now you've got your minimum construction. The problem with that is that the voltage will be so high, capacitively stored in the air gap or in the rubber insulation around the coils, such that you're going to have a hard time sleeping at night. And if you have this hooked up to your bed, that's kind of defeats the purpose of being able to sleep at night. So we want to create some space, some density of material. The plastic is not very dense. You want density because that's where the voltage is going to be stored, in the density of the dielectric material, which the plastic, you can make up for it by extending it out into space, or air for that matter, even further. But then you're taking up more space. So to be efficient, you want to use a dense dielectric material, and glass and sand are very dense materials. So you put the quartz sand as in there as the dielectric material because it's dense, it'll store the charge very nicely. And so will the iron core of that coil wire. It'll store the electromagnetic field of the coil wire very nice and efficiently because the iron is a very efficient, dense storage medium for an electromagnetic field, for the magnetic field of the electromagnetic voltage-oriented wave traveling through the wire, which is mainly going to be magnetic-oriented because it's going to kind of lack an electric field component because it lacks current. You know, duh. So you're emphasizing a magnetic field inside that iron core, which is perfect because it's an iron core. But now we still have a voltage-oriented aspect of that magnetic signal traveling down this open circuit, and so we want to store it in a dielectric medium, and quartz is a pretty good medium to store it in. So you're going to need quartz, because if you don't put that in, you're in the space between the two plates, the floating plate and the coil of wire serving as the other plate, you're going to have trouble sleeping at night. So you want a lot of dielectric depth to the dielectric material, so that your dielectric field generated by the dielectric wave traveling along the wire, or along the surface of the wire as the case may be, is going to have a lot of dense quartz material to store itself into, with a lot of capacity for more storage left over. And you want that because you want to be able to sleep at night. That's essentially how you're able to make the device such that you're able to sleep at night. You want more capacity available than what's actually being used. And, of course, the signals traveling through this is going to be very minor, but we're beefing it up because of the coil surrounding the iron core. So we have to beef up our dielectric storage medium. We can't just use air. It won't work. Especially a minuscule amount of air space between let's say, the aluminum foil and the coil of wire surrounding the iron toroidal core. It just ain't going to work. You're not going to be able to sleep. It's going to be like coffee. It's going to keep you up all night if you're plugged into this thing all day. And the minute you get into bed, you're going to bounce out of bed with a tremendous amount of energy, and you're not going to be able to settle down and sleep. Believe me, I've been there. I've already tried. See, I've gone through all the wrong ways of doing this, so I can tell you ahead of time what it's going to be like. But go ahead. Find out for yourself, direct experience, what it feels like to have the foil wrapped directly around the coil form and nothing in between except that air gap or the rubber insulation of the coil of wire. And see what happens. You know, it may not hit you right away. It might take a few days, but you'll find out what it's like. Maybe a few weeks if you're very insensitive. Whatever. So we want that quartz sand, but we're going to need the foil or the film, the metallic film on the inside of the chassis, to create that polarization. Otherwise, the polarization goes off into space and is never intense. We want to create intensity on the one hand, but we also want to create a large capacitance for storage on the other. We want both characteristics to this capacitor that is geared for an open circuit. So this is how we manage to modify a capacitor to suit our purpose, which is an open circuit, and not block our connection, our strongly coupled connection with the earth. We don't want to block that and create a loose coupling. We want a strong coupling. So we want that wire to be non-broken. It's already been broken in the sense that it's not a loop anymore. There's no return wire. There's just one wire between us and the earth, but we don't want to go any further and break that as well by putting the dielectric material in between two pieces of wire with a plate on either side. One plate faces the earth and one plate faces us. Uh-uh. We don't want that. Nor do we want to have a true AC transformer situation in which we have the primary coil and the secondary coil are matched equal number of turns, so it's a one-to-one characteristic AC transformer, and one coil faces the earth and the other coil faces the body, and both coils terminate. One end of that coil goes to the earth, but the other end goes to nothing. And the other coil, one end goes to the body, and the other end of the coil goes to nothing. I mean, that would be a true AC transformer, but we don't want that. We want a DC transformer because we want both coils, the primary and the secondary, to be linked together in series. So we're shorting out the AC transformer to turn it into a DC transformer. Okay? And to top it off, it's a DC transformer of an open circuit. So I've pretty much described the fundamentals of the design of this enhanced earthing device. I already have a provisional patent, and I hopefully will finish it within a year's time, so I've already beat you to the punch if you haven't gotten a provisional patent of your own ahead of me. But this is how it's designed. And there are the characteristics, as I've alluded to already, about wiring, based on whether you're in the northern hemisphere, the southern hemisphere, or the equator. But that's not in my provisional patent because, you know, that's left to the skill of the artist to figure out. as John Benigni loves to quote patent language. How do they call it? Those skilled in the art. Whatever. I literally had my intuition teach me how it's done, not my experience. So, you know, some of this, you just got to be connected to the source. So if you get that connection, all the more power to you. But I do describe it on my website, so just go there and you find out. I mean, I think I've kept it up to date, but I can't guarantee that it is up to date. In fact, I can't guarantee that anything on that website is up to date. What I've told you now is up to date, and though I've left certain things out. So it'll be a mystery whether or not anything on that website that's not covered by this particular video, whether or not it's up to date or not. I said not twice, didn't I? So I feel very open, and I've just told you now how the earthing enhancer is designed. Using words only, I suppose I'll have to include some diagrams now on this webpage, the vinyasi.info/media/regeneration webpage, to make things easier for you. Anyway, so there you are, and I have nothing more to say. Catch you later!